Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, home of many sports played in front of some people and not some people, and last night, a virtual Barack Obama, which was interesting.
Yeah, he only virtually drone strikes you.
There it is.
Yeah. I'm Ryan Lambert from this podcast.
I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
Oh, yeah, it's true. And you're in Puck Soup, where we all observed yesterday the cathartic celebration of the Tampa Bay Lightning back home in Florida. A real spectacle. Started the day on boats, socially distanced from the fans, partying and drinking. Alex Killorn back on the skidoo, driving around with the cup. All full circle because he did the Doc Talk thing and he got the boys back in town in that video beforehand. And we closed with, probably the biggest super spreader event this side of a Trump rally. And Alex Killorn on stage praising the governor of Florida for reopening the bars. This did not set well with folks out there, Ryan.
Yeah, I can't imagine why. It's we're going to spend like 2 months talking about how seriously we're taking this disease. We're going to do everything in our power to avoid getting it. The second we're out of the bubble, we don't care how many fans die. We actually love that shit.
In fairness, he did put the kill in Killorn, you have to admit.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. Before I give a take here, Sean, what was your take on the parade and the celebration in the time in these troubled times?
Yeah, I mean, probably the same reaction that I think most of us had, which is I'm watching it going, that's not good, and B, I really hope in a week or two we don't start hearing some really bad news from that. I mean, I get it. I get why. I mean, obviously it's Florida. You're going to have a party that people are going to show up. And I get it from the player's perspective. Like what they just went through for 2.5 months was really hard. And I get that, you know, once they're sort of let out, the temptation to cut loose a little bit or a lot is going to be there. But, that didn't look great. I mean, when you're passing the Stanley Cup around and random strangers are taking turns drinking out of it. Any other year, that stuff is awesome. Not this year. I get it, but I didn't like it. I can't imagine anyone who wasn't there and directly involved thought any of that looked like a good idea.
I think you hit on the thing though, like that I'm struggling with, which is that, you know, obviously it's bad, and like you said, it's the last state that you'd want this to happen in because they haven't really done due diligence on this disease in months, by design in the eyes of many, because there's an election this year. So that was tough to see. And it was tough to see DeSantis get a shout out from Killorn on stage too, because of all those reasons. But like we all recognize what these guys went through for the last 2.5 months from a mental health perspective. I think we've all been very sensitive to it. I wrote about it a little bit today in the column. And like, there's a certain getting out of prison aspect to this thing that happened on Monday. We're 2 days removed from it. This is a once in a lifetime thing for these guys. They're all shit faced by this point. So I get it. Like I think, yeah. And what I'm trying to say is, like, I think there's a space that you could exist in where you can fucking hate it because it's bad, but you could also completely understand why it happened.
Yeah, it's not like other people have had a hard time mentally the last several months. It's just the hockey guys, so it actually makes perfect sense why they would want to behave like this, and it I would say excuses it. So there you go.
Well, I don't think anyone says it excuses it. In fact, I think that I explicitly said it doesn't excuse it.
And yet.
But yet you can understand why it happened, can't you?
No, because, like, I'm not supposed to, like, go outside and, like, hang out with my friends and stuff like that.
Is hanging out with your friends a lifelong dream that you've had? And that you
so it does excuse it. Okay, no,
years.
That makes sense. Perfect sense.
No, it you fucking don't conflate excuse with understand. That's two different things.
Well, like, would it be understandable that I want to hang out with my friends?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you
go. But when you hang out with your friends, are you going to be fucking shit faced and having the emotional buildup of the last 5 years just explode in a way that maybe doesn't necessarily conform to COVID standards?
Yeah, well, it's fucking, again, like, it's fucking stupid. And, like, oh, yeah, okay, I get that they want a party and everything. But the fact that they're, like, endangering themselves and, like, hundreds of others and stuff like that, like.
Oh, it's fucking stupid. There's no question about that. And it actually is underscored by what they went through, which is that they were able to win the cup by not doing this, by fucking getting tested every day, and by not interacting with people, and by being socially distant. And so it's just a big fucking mess. Like, it is obviously just, like, a sign of the times that we're even having this conversation, where we go from a thing that that happened only because they were careful to them celebrating that thing by being completely not careful. Like, it just sucks. But I understand why they fucking acted the way they did. I think the fans are
dumber shit. That's the reason why.
This is a bit of a pro athlete mentality, right? This is the super extreme version of the pro athlete thing, where you go through the whole season and you don't eat any carbs. And for some of these guys, even these days, like, you don't even drink, you don't do anything. And then your season finishes and you've got a couple weeks to just eat whatever you want, drink whatever you want, to just go nuts, and then you get back into it and get ready to go. And this is the extreme and potentially life-threatening version of that. But I'm kind of with you, Greg. I don't excuse it, but I get it. I wonder what, if any, input the league had on any of this. Like, the league doesn't organize this stuff, but was there nobody who at any point picked up the phone and went, like, you guys aren't going to, you know, be out there passing the cup around to hundreds of random strangers, right? Or was it just sort of like, you know what, you guys did everything we asked for the last 2.5 months, so you do whatever you want now? I'm curious about that. I don't think we'll ever find out, but
I'm curious if the league, with such a track record of caring about their physical well-being when they're away from the rink, reached out and said, don't do this.
Then if you want to be a cynic, just from a PR perspective, right? I mean, there's got to be somebody who would go, like,
correct,
this is going to look terrible if we see exactly what we saw. So, I don't know.
And maybe
they did make that phone call, and the Tampa Bay Lightning or whoever said, thanks for passing that on, and screw you, we're going to do whatever we want anyways.
Right, we've been waiting forever for this. I think it's a good point, and I think that you could see during the course of the day how, even on, like, social media, just, like, it went from being, oh, how cute, you know, they're on boats, to it being, hey, maybe not have half of Clearwater drink from the fucking Stanley Cup, you know. Maybe that's not the thing to do. So it's a tough look, and I'm with you on that sort of, like, athlete mentality thing. I was kind of bouncing around in my head when I was watching that yesterday about the idea of, not only the usual cathartic, I'm going to go home with my boys and fucking pound beers and eat like shit for 2 weeks thing that happens every off season, but now it's probably, I mean, like, to be super cynical about it, do you think that any of them were just kind of like, I'm going to throw myself into this because I know I'm going to have a few months to recover from it, like, if I get it? Like, as fucking horrible as that sounds.
Yeah.
I mean, would you put it past them?
Yeah, like, 20-something pro athletes, they probably do feel like they're invincible on this. And they may be feeling that, hey, if I'm going to get it anyways at some point, now's the time. And I either aren't thinking about who they might spread it to, or I guess are willing to accept that risk on behalf of other people. That probably did factor in. I think he is, you know, it's one thing to say I'm not going to party during the season because we're seeing right now in the NFL what can happen, right? Like we just as we're recording this, the news is breaking. The NFL has postponed its first game because of an outbreak on a team. We saw it in Major League Baseball pretty constantly at the beginning of the season. We're going to see it during the NHL season. I mean, they're not going back into bubbles, so this is going to happen at some point in hockey too. This is one of those things. Look, the nature of what we're dealing with here. 2 weeks from now, we could look back and go, "Oh, you remember that Stanley Cup thing that people were upset about? Yeah, nothing ever really seemed to come of that." Oh, good.
Well, I mean, the good news is Florida doesn't do contact tracing, so we'll never know for sure anyway.
that too, yeah.
This is true.
But we could also be looking back on this and saying that was an absolute tragedy that happened, and you know, here's all the things that have come out of that. So I don't know, man. We cross our fingers.
The absolute last place in the United States you'd want a team to win a championship at this point.
Your options were Tampa and Dallas, so you weren't going to come out on top either way there.
That was a tough look, man. And to your point, Ryan, like it is a real bad look to have been so careful and to have been so meticulous and to, you know, have these guys talking about, you know, your masks should be on to give a good signal to people back at home, you know, like being responsible and shit like that. And then, I mean, obviously, just like every other fucking bad decision you make if you're in your 20s, alcohol is probably a factor. But it's a tough look to end the season on that note, right? Like it's they were so careful in the restart and meticulous in the way they bought the sport back, and then to have the celebration not... I mean, it mirrored it for like a few hours, and then they went to the stadium, and then like all fucking bets were off where, you know, Alex Killorn is running around having people drink from the Stanley Cup and smacking hands like he's fucking Jay Leno during a monologue.
Yeah, and it was weird, when he gave the shout-out to the Florida governor. Like, I expected my Twitter timeline to be flooded with people telling him to stick to sports and politics,
right?
But it was weird that didn't happen.
Very confused. I know. Odd. Yeah. Weird. Anyways, back to happier times. The Lightning won. I think we could all agree that that's probably the result that is the most satisfactory, in that they are demonstrably the best team, the best constructed team, the most talented team, the team that plays the best kind of hockey. In that series against Dallas, what was your takeaway from the final, Ronnie?
Yeah, I mean, the best team won. Like that, it happens so rarely in this sport in particular that it's kind of nice to see every once in a while. It's like, oh yeah, if you have like three all-stars at every position, you can be a pretty good team.
Right.
And not just like, well, we got beat by this Finnish guy nobody ever fucking heard of before today. So, it really, those two teams were kind of like the two teams that ever win the Stanley Cup, right? Is the team with the anonymous,
the hot goalie
and the anonymous, like, contributors or the guys you don't expect, like fucking Corey Perry being the overtime hero of an elimination game and all that kind of stuff. And also, you know, the team with the best goalie, the best defenseman, and the best forward in the league. Like, in the playoffs anyway. Like, those are the two teams that ever win. And, you know, more often than not, it's the one that kind of just gets there by the seat of its pants, as opposed to the one with all the talent that took forever to build. And, you know, they drafted right for 8 years and got this roster, and it's like, oh, you lost in the second round again. Like, you just,
yeah.
So yeah, it's nice to see the I almost said the good guys, but now I don't know about that, but the good guys win.
Yep. That's exactly how I feel. And like last year when the Lightning got swept and there were all those other upsets in the first round last year, I mean, it was crazy. And a lot of people were saying, this is great. And I was kind of like, I don't know if it is, because like sometimes the best team's got to win. Like, this is, or else what are we doing here? And I had a lot of people push back. A lot of people didn't like that take. But I just feel like we're the Stanley Cup final just ended. We all immediately go into off-season mode, right? The draft is next week. Free agency, we're told there's a bunch of trades probably about to happen. And I love this part of the year. And I think a lot of people love this part of the year more than they love the actual hockey. Like, this is the fun stuff. But it's only fun if you think that all these moves that are going to get made over the next little while matter. And they only matter if building the best team sometimes matters. And so I do think, as a fan, it's great to see a team that has drafted well, you know, both in terms of nailing high picks and finding those second-day gems. They've been smart with free agency. They've made some good trades along the line. They've made some mistakes, too, but recovered from them. The fact that all of that builds up to this team that from November on was the best team in the league, and it rolls through the playoffs and they win the Stanley Cup, to me, as a fan, that makes everything that's going to come more fun than just having some random team. And that's a really disrespectful way to talk about a good team in the Dallas Stars, but having some team with a hot goalie just win the Stanley Cup, and then you're sitting there going, well, what are we doing in the, who cares what happens in the offseason? Just find a goalie who's going to get hot at the right time for 2 months, and
right,
that's all that matters.
That's a good point. Yeah, it sort of validates the meticulous building and the word I heard from in talking to some like GMs this week was patience.
Yep.
And that's to me the key. Like, the opportunity was there to blow up the core. I think Cooper, I would have been very interested to see what would have happened to Cooper last season if he hadn't signed an extension in March. Like, mm-hmm. would the regular season success have counterbalanced the playoff failure?
And not only last season, but this October. Like, remember,
right,
they started off as a 500 team through October. Steven Stamkos was saying, we have to change something or it's all going to happen. Like, they were not in bad shape relative to a typical team, but for a cup contender, they looked like they were really fighting it.
Yeah, like how quickly could that have become Nashville and like them firing Laviolette because the results are middling and their playoff results are middling? Like,
absolutely.
It could have gone fucking sideways there.
I mean, I wrote about this earlier in the week where I looked at, you know, because the one danger with a team like the Lightning is they've been among the very best teams in the league, if not the best team in the league, for the last, I would say, 6 or 7 years, going back to that one, that really bad lockout year they had. Ever since, they've been real good year after year. And that makes a lot of people look at it and go, well, it was inevitable they were going to win a cup. Of course they were going to mm-hmm. win the cup. I remember 5 years ago, I wrote a column where I said, who's going to win the cup in the next 5 years? And I gave everyone odds, and I gave the Lightning less than 50-50 odds, and people were blown away. They were like, how could you? There's like an 80 or 90% chance they're going to win. Of course they are. Look how good they are. And it almost didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the reason is it's never inevitable. It's always inevitable in hindsight. But I looked at a whole bunch of times where there was an inflection point where things could have gone bad for the Lightning, but they made the right decision. And I was surprised that, you know, when I sat down to write it, I kind of did each thing individually. And it wasn't until it went up and somebody in the comments section was like, do you realize that like 7 out of your 8 decisions were just them being patient and not overreacting?
Yeah, not pulling the trigger on
and
something.
Not overreacting. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, they didn't overreact to missing the playoffs in 2017. They didn't overreact, obviously, last year and with Cooper. They didn't overreact to Steven Stamkos heading to free agency. You know, they didn't trade him or turn it into a whole big dramatic thing. They just really were a team that they had a ton of talent, and it didn't take any special insight to know that, but they believed in what they had. They believed in the program. Mm-hmm. They understood that there's 30-plus teams in the league. Even the best team isn't going to win the cup every year, and they didn't overreact, and they didn't listen to a lot of the voices telling them to overreact, and they stuck with it, and they were ultimately rewarded, but there was no guarantee they would be. We've seen lots of teams get really good, stick with it, and it never happens, but the Lightning clearly, in hindsight, did the right thing at almost every one of those points, and usually the right thing was keep calm, keep going, and stick to the plan.
You know, it's funny, though, you mentioned the voices, and I think I mentioned it on the show before. Like, I think the fact that this was in a bubble helped them immeasurably. Like, I maybe it's just my time covering the Capitals and seeing the fucking psychological thesis paper that you could write on how many times they grip the stick too hard in front of their home crowd, or how many times the failures of playoff past came back to haunt them in a series. I really felt, and it was one of the reasons I picked Tampa on top of, you know, the fucking talent, that playing in the bubble and not having the fans there and not having the media up in your face asking you about Stamkos every fucking day while they're crowding around your locker and all that shit that they've had to deal with in the past, not having that was going to be hugely beneficial. And Cooper's talked about that, like the ability to close out the noise and to try to put your phone away and to not hear what people are saying about you. And I feel like that was an aspect of it, but I also feel like the other aspect of it was they never put themselves in a situation where they had to hear that shit. Like, they were so fucking
efficient. They ripped through the playoffs.
They really did. Like 5 games against Columbus, 5 games against Boston, which is, I don't think, something that any of us anticipated. Then 6 against the Islanders, where, as we saw in the past with the Washington and Pittsburgh series, they would lose Game 6 and then fuck up in Game 7. Well, they didn't do that here. And then the same deal against Dallas, where they just, you know, took them out in Game 6 and didn't have to worry about the demons coming back from your Game 7 failures. Like, it was a fucking assassin-like, the way that they rolled through these playoffs. And I think that really benefited the mental health side of this thing of not having to start believing that you're voodoo hexed or whatever the fuck in the playoffs like they've had in the past.
Well, you know, it's kind of, for me, that stuff is kind of the stuff about the Ducks for a million years. Oh, you know, it's... They can't win a Game 7. I don't know. On some level, it's like, sure, but also, you know, if you give a talented team – I keep saying it, but like if you give a talented team enough wax at it, they're going to not fuck up one of these times.
But don't you think there's something to be said for not going to a Game 7 though? Like that's
– Yeah,
that's
well, point. I mean, right. Like you're – in any given game, the best team has like, what, like a 58% chance of – winning, right? So like sometimes you lose 42% of the time, and you can lose 42%, but if you don't go to a Game 7, like if you don't face elimination at all, then you're gonna be in fucking good shape to not get eliminated.
Yeah. Agreed. And so there's that aspect of it, and you know, there one thing I wanted to say about Cooper, and I've been having to review the Quest for the Cup show on ESPN Plus, which has been okay in some spots, but they kept up the tradition of the second to last episode of these shows, whether it's the Road to the Winter Classic show or the Stanley Cup shows, always being really fucking good. And the one they put on last night, I'd recommend it if you're. It's got the Stamkos stuff. It's got a lot of really cool shit in it, including like Barkley Goodrow's parents being inside the bubble for your little tearjerker moments and shit like that. It doesn't cover the cup win. That's next week, but it's got really good stuff in it. But the thing about Cooper Cooper's been really kind of revelatory in this series and being able to see how he handles the room and what he says. And I'll never forget something that Victor Hedman said to me a few years ago about the way Cooper coaches, which is that the guys love playing for him because the style that he wants them to play is a style that they love playing.
Yeah, it's fun to play lightning hockey.
Right. And so, like, in the locker room last night on the episode, there's a great moment. I think it's an intermission of Game 4 where he's talking about, you know, any time Dallas is playing well, it's because the Lightning are skating backwards. And his thing is just like, just keep going forward. Like, just go, push it. And the thing Hedman said is that it was like, even as a defender, the thing that you love is that you're not asked to collapse around the goalie. You're not asked to fucking play Islanders hockey. Even as a defender, your mode is to attack. And there's just something beautiful about that. Because like you said, Ryan, like at the end of the day, some of these playoffs that we watched were a battle for the NHL soul. As far as like stylistically, you had teams playing anti-hockey at times versus teams like the Lightning that play such a beautiful, well-rounded game, like offensively thrilling with the talent that they have, but also great defensively in the way that you want to see defense played, which is possessing the puck, which is pushing the tempo, which is pounding the other team with your forecheck. and not simply just putting five guys around the crease. And yes, I am saying that as a fucking Devils fan. Fuck you. That was a different time. But it was great to see. It was great to see the team that plays good hockey and the kind of hockey you'd want to see win. And like Sean said, I hope that's validating. A little bit on Dallas. What do we think about them going forward? First of all, I'm really interested in this Rick Bonus thing now, because like, it's one thing to like put the guy over and be like, if he wants to stay, he can stay. And Rick Bonus at the end of the playoffs being like, well, turns out I kind of want to keep going. But, I mean, there has to be some semblance of, is this lightning in a bottle kind of deal for a coach that historically has never been able to find success on a regular basis in the National Hockey League in the postseason or in the regular season, right?
Well, I mean, look, you know, I think – I can't remember the stat now if it's, you know, since Bonus took over or for the full season or whatever it was. But they were one of the best expected goals teams in the league this year, one of the best possession teams in the league this year. Like, I – on some level, I think it's a fluke just because you can definitely say, like, well, you know, the Lightning or the Avalanche were on their third goalie and their backup goalie got hurt and – or their starting goalie got hurt and, you know, they had this guy come out of nowhere and have, like, two monster games and, you know, who knows what Kiviranta really is, that kind of thing. Like, that's all true, but – again, like the process they played, like the way they played all season, it might not have been like the most beautiful hockey in the world or anything like that. But you have to say that they were, you know, playing a kind of style that is conducive to long term success. I don't know if, you know, like if because we've seen teams do that for a season or two and then stop being able to do that especially because, you know, Dallas's core is so old. But I do think that, you know, just based on the in-season track record, he deserves a crack at it.
Yeah. What do you think, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question, really. I mean, at some point, look, is Rick Bonus a better head coach than Gerard Gallant or Bruce Boudreau or any number of guys that could be available? I'm not convinced that he is, but he was their guy. He got them there. The players seem to love him. He's more than paid his dues. I don't know what message you're sending to that team if you do anything other than bring him back, assuming he wants to come back. He's 65 years old. He might, you know, decide that this is a good place as any to put an end to it. But if assuming he wants to come back, then yeah, of course you bring him back. I can't imagine how you go into that room as a GM or whoever and say, we thought we had a better guy. And then every single player is looking around going, well, is there a better guy than me out there? Because, you know, am I next? Who's,
and for a lot of the answers,
there's got to be.
For a lot of guys on the team, the answer is yes, they're definitely fucking
there. There is, exactly. So
yeah. No, it's, and to Bonus's credit, like the thing that you have to say is that even if you want to give, as Ryan mentioned, the expected goals and the underlying numbers credit to the system that Jim Montgomery installed there, and you could give a lot of credit to that system because they've been pretty good for 2 years, and they basically just kind of had a continuation of what they were doing under Montgomery with Bonus for the majority of the regular season. He did make the adjustments, though, to make this a cup finalist, like getting the defense more involved, tweaking a few things, understanding his lineup really well. I think he moved pieces around really well during the postseason. He coached really well during the postseason. And I'd be intrigued because, again, like the window is still there for them to win. I mean, if you sign Joe Pavelski for 3 years, you're obviously hoping to win something within those 3 years.
I know.
You don't have a leg to stand on the Pavelski thing right now. Come on. You're wrong on Pavelski. Pavelski got him to the cup final.
Did he get them there, or did Anton Khudobin get them there?
He was their leading goal scorer. Great.
Yeah, right. The thing I always said was, you know, can you count on, like, Ben Bishop? Turns out you couldn't. That's – whoops, yeah.
And to go back to something you said, by the way, if you ever, again, want to prove the existence of the hockey gods, it is the fucking cruel fate of beating a better Colorado team because Colorado was missing fucking half their lineup and then losing in the cup final while missing three of your top five penalty killers and one of your goalies. Like, it all comes back around at some point.
And not only that, but, I mean, Ben Bishop, man, he goes to the cup final with the Lightning five years ago.
Absolutely.
Gets hurt. They lose that series – potentially because he got hurt. 5 years later, they've moved on and replaced him. Your new team gets to the final against your old team, and you can't play because you're hurt. Like, that is
that brutal. Sucks.
That yeah. is
it's
awful.
A tough look. But you bring up a good point, though, and I think we should probably talk about this. Because I've been trying to kind of figure this out for the last week. Like, what do you make of Stamkos at this point? Like, I mean...
Yeah.
First of all, let's talk about the guy first. Okay, you've lived your life for this moment. You get in the final. You have that incredible fucking 3 minutes of hockey and score a goal on your only playoff shot. Insane. Like, insane moment. Like, you couldn't even fucking script it better. Except for the part where you're not a part of this championship run, and they also look fucking amazing without you. And is it the old Patrick Ewing effect where if he's in the lineup, maybe this doesn't happen? And maybe if he's in the lineup in the past, it doesn't happen? I mean, like,
no.
I'm so...
No, it's not
But, dude, but like, with your... So there's two ways to... two questions. If you're the Lightning, how do you view Stamkos? And if you're Stamkos, how do you view your name on that cup? Like, how do you process it if you're Stamkos?
I think I look at it and I go, oh, that's cool. I'm right on there with all the other guys. But, I mean, the thing with the Lightning is, you know, Stamkos, he had two health... It seems like a thing where he has two healthy seasons in a row, and then he's just going to miss, you know, like 30 games.
Right.
And, you know, at some, like I think I said it last week, like, he'd probably have, like, 500 goals or more right now, right? Mm. If he doesn't... only played 17 in 2016-17. He played 37 in 13-14. You know, he played 57 this year, and he was great when he played, but he, you know, doesn't seem like he can stay healthy. And the fact that he's now going to be 30 for next season, like, that doesn't portend good things for him, I guess.
And I'm not trying to say he's Carson Wentz. Right? Like, looking at Nick Foles' name on the Super Bowl poster or whatever. Like, he clearly played a role in the last decade in the Lightning being the Lightning. And he was certainly somebody behind the scenes, according to everybody, that was, you know, an important part of them doing what they did in the bubble. You know, and that moment that he had in this final, you can't take away from him. But, man, I just try to put myself in his shoes and be like, I'm an important part of this team. I am the captain. I'm one of the best players of my generation, and here is the accomplishment that I've wanted. And I had a cameo appearance, like, yeah, in the effort to win it. I can't comprehend how that feels.
I mean, I'm not going to try to get in his head and figure out how he feels about it. But I would say that I think this is the fact that he got in for those 3 minutes, the fact that he scored a goal. And it wasn't just, you know, 3 minutes of chopping around out there and then he's out of the game. I think that makes a difference. I also think it makes a big difference that he was there. We saw it. He was part of it. He's greeting guys on the way up. Like, if it had been one of these situations where it was a different kind of injury where he's just gone, you know, like this is the way the NHL treats injuries a lot is, like, if you're hurt, you're gone. And nobody even sees you until you're ready to come back. And, you know, you're almost not part of the team. If that had been the case and they win without him, I think it's a different narrative, maybe. I don't think we overthink it. He's a great player. He is a guy who gets hurt sometimes, although, I mean, you look at his history of injuries. He broke his leg, you know.
Yeah.
Getting, you know, sliding into the net. That's not something where, oh, you're injury prone. That's just a freak thing that happens.
But is he accursed? That's because, you know, the blood clot and then the shoulder or whatever, you know. Did they ever say actually what definitively it was? Right.
They haven't yet. And he mentioned some off-ice stuff through. Like, the whole thing's kind of a fucking mystery, and I'm sure we'll find out about it at some point. We found out from Sagan's agent all of his injuries within 2 minutes of the final ending through Darren Drager. But I also think your point's really well taken. And it's such a weird sense of deja vu to have had gone through this with Stamkos' postseason where, like, you're hearing all these questions about when are you coming back, when are you coming back. It's exactly what happened in that Pittsburgh series a few years ago where, you know, I think that was the series where he came back for Game 7 –
Yeah.
And that was the only game he played. And I just remember covering that series, and it was the same stuff. It was just like asking them, what's Stephen's status? Well, he's skating, but we don't know when. And just to have that be like a reoccurring theme for your star player is a really weird thing.
I don't think we overthink it. I don't, you know, as far as like, what does this mean to the Lightning? Are you sitting there going, geez, you know, we never won with Stamkos, and now this year
trade his ass.
Have him, and you know, no, you don't go down any of those roads. I think my thought, as far as what this means to the Lightning, is holy crap, will they ever be terrifyingly good if Steven Stamkos is healthy and at full? You know, even if he's in his 30s, a second liner, like he's not a 60 goal guy anymore. He's only a 30 goal guy. You drop that into this lineup, oh my lord, they're just going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Unbeatable until they run into a hot goalie, and then they'll be
beatable.
The whole dance all over again.
Yep. Well, they're going to have to also make a couple of cap decisions too, which we could talk about when we get down the line. But I also wanted to talk about the Conn Smythe. I don't think this is a Sid has Phil's Conn Smythe level robbery, but I kind of I didn't have a vote. Emily did. I think at the end of the day, she put point at the top of her ballot, and I think I probably would have done the same after game six. Like, I feel like if you're voting midway through game six and I'm looking at the final and I'm looking at how many points point had, and I'm looking at those two goals in game four, and I'm looking at the first goal in game six, which obviously
and power play goal, goals, first goal of the game.
The
playoff award, not just a final award.
I got to give it to – I love Hedman, and I think that there's no wrong answer between those two, but I think I got to give it the point.
I think there's no wrong answer between those two, Kucherov and Vasilevsky. Like,
yeah.
They were all unfucking believable, and that's why they won the Stanley Cup so easily. They had their four best players play maybe the best hockey of their lives over a two-month period. Like I think all those guys are really great players. I think you got to give it to Hedman just because, you know, the load he carried defensively, and he played with fucking like literally every other defenseman on the Lightning.
Jan Ruda.
He played like with 100 minutes with him, because that's just and like I think that you know, again, like you're not allowed to win an MVP award in the regular season unless you're a forward. So, like, let's give it to the fucking defenseman who played, you know,
every
fucking minute all these minutes with, like, all these different guys. It's not like he was just playing 26 minutes with one other guy who was playing 26 minutes. Everybody else was playing, you know, 22 or whatever, and he was like, oh, I'm just going to play with everybody. It doesn't matter. And I'll still be insanely dominant. And he scored, 10 goals. So it's not like, you know, he had three goals and Point had, 14?
Mm.
But, Hedman set a record tied a record maybe for defenseman goals in a season or a postseason. Yeah, okay, fair enough. I think that all checks out.
Yeah. Again, no, and it's funny you should say that's also a really good point about their star players. There's a lot of parallels to be drawn between this team and the Capitals, I think, as far as, you know, don't blow up your core, show a little patience, know exactly what your lineup needs, and go out and get it, kind of shit. But the Capitals won because it was the first postseason where Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Backstrom, Carlson, like, all played well in the same postseason.
Yeah.
And it's such a hard – I mean, simple formula. Have all your best players play real good at the same time.
That's
like,
it,
obviously.
Right? Have all your best players that's all well it is, though. And a hot goalie.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You've got to have the best players to start with, right? Like, that's the,
correct.
That's the hard
yep,
part.
That's you absolutely just, right. You
know, if your best player is David Legwan, then you're not – him playing his best hockey is probably not going to make a big difference. So, yeah, I mean – It's one of those things. It's always simple in hindsight, and it's always easy when you look back. But that full credit to the Lightning. And I don't know, where do you guys think the Stars go from here? Because we did that thing again where we started talking about the Stars and then shifted over to the other team, and we're going to make their fans mad. Are they?
It's tough for the Stars.
Are they in your top three for the West next year?
I think so.
top
Vegas, Colorado,
three?
I'm assuming.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what happens with Hudobin. Because I think
that's the real money at him. That's the real thing. Like, I think he's almost certainly gone from Dallas, right?
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, he's 34. He's going to have multiple offers probably of way bigger money than he's used to. The Stars can't afford to keep him because, you know, they don't have too much to re-sign this season. But, like, you know, they're going to have to give Heiskanen a new deal next year, and they're going to have to completely rebuild their defense and most of their forward group next summer. So, like, they, unless they're getting somebody, they're getting him back on a 1-year deal, which why would he do that? It's tough to see it with them just keeping him. And their real problem is, you know, do we go out or do we, you know, just say, well, it's Jake Ottinger's our backup now? Or do you say, well, we need somebody more reliable than that because Ben Bishop's only going to play 39 games
or whatever the number is. I mean, it's the right summer to have that problem.
Correct.
Exactly.
The right offseason to have that problem.
Dallas, if we assume Ben Bishop is going to be healthy going into next year, obviously,
okay.
You know, you don't. I'm saying healthy all year because he's at
just
that
to start
he's
the
a
season,
big
yes.
guy and, but
game
but
one
where it's not a situation where we're gonna find out he has surgery and he's out for 6 months or something like that. Like he's your guy going into next year. I think Dallas is a team where it makes a lot of sense to say, you know what, there's 10 different goalies out there that we would be happy to have as our backup. Wait until 8 of them have signed.
Yeah.
And then we just, because here's the thing, it's one thing to be, you know, the Senators trying to go out and get a goalie. It's another thing to be Dallas, where you're like, we just went to the Stanley Cup final and our backup played a ton.
Yeah.
So come down to Dallas, pay no taxes, you know, do all this other stuff, play for Rick Bowness, who everyone loves. Yeah. You know what? If I'm, you know, a Braden Holtby or whoever it is, and maybe I didn't land the big deal I wanted, yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'll take that phone call.
Yep.
Yeah. And play in back of Miro Heiskanen and John Klingberg for a while.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're okay there. Yeah, they've got some stuff to build on. I mean, the two defensemen, they seem like they've got something in Gurianov. Their window is still wide open next season. I am concerned about the grind of this playoff and then like a condensed season and what that could mean for some pretty old bodies on that team.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. That core is not young. I mean, like
spry. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Tyler Seguin's probably the youngest of their like big name forwards. And he's 28, 29. Jamie Benn's like, you don't think of it, but Jamie Benn's well past 30. He's like 31, 32. So yeah, I mean, they have some really good young players, but I don't think they have enough, like even like Foxa and like Matthias Janmark and Roope Hintz. Like Roope Hintz is like 24. He's not like young. He's you know in his prime, but he's not. You don't look at him and go, oh, this guy is just coming into the league. Blah blah blah. Like he's
and it's one of those things where right, every time you say a team is old or you know the fans always go, what about this guy? What about this? Like every team has young players. Every team has some prospects. Like they're not, you know, this isn't the 2002 Red Wings, because that's not how you can build teams anymore. But I would be concerned if I'm Dallas, I'm looking at this going, okay, are we, you know, remember this team like didn't make the playoffs last year, or no, they did. They made the playoffs.
They barely
last year,
made it. Yeah.
But then, you know, didn't make it for a couple years before that. You know, I'm sitting there going, you know, is this a good team that's finally clicked together and now we've got a window of a couple of years at least, even if, you know, yeah, Ben's getting up there, Pavelski's not going to be necessarily a prime guy that whole time. We've got a window now, or am I sitting there going, we're a good team, not a great team, we're one of those teams that needs everything to break right in the playoffs for us to make a run, and it happened, and we ended up 2 wins short. And now we're going to be one of those teams that goes to the final. And I mean, how many times have we seen it, right? The Predators, you go down the list of teams that make the finals.
You talk yourself into it. Yep.
You know, they make a push and then they just don't find that level again. And you don't, in today's NHL, like you don't have to suddenly drop 20 points in the standings. you can drop 5 points in the standings, and suddenly
you're in
a very different world. So I don't know. I'd like to be wrong because I like this team, and I they were interesting to watch, and I think there's some interesting stories here and players that are fun to root for, and Rick Bowness, obviously, but I'm not completely sold that they're a part of the long-term conversation as far as contenders in the West.
Also, Colorado's going to win the Cup next year, so I mean, it's kind of hard to.
Well, they're going to get Hall and Pietrangelo, so why wouldn't
they? Right. That's right. So, yeah, it's a tough one, but.
And that's the other thing to say. If they were in the Pacific Division, where it's like, oh, maybe Vancouver's something and Vegas is there, but everybody else is kind of a question mark at least, that would be one thing, but they're in the Central Division. And.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tougher division. Minnesota's probably going to be better this year. And
we haven't said anything about St. Louis, right?
And like St. Louis,
a year removed from a Stanley Cup, had a really good regular season.
Everybody gets COVID.
With that, and they lost Tarasenko for a lot of the regular season and shit. So, But again, like Dallas has some pieces left. I mean, they've got another kick at the can. There's a bit of a ray of light there. This episode of PuckSoup is sponsored by Raycon. Raycon, as you know, is the best wireless earbuds you can buy. Everybody on this show has tried them. I use them religiously. As you know, because of COVID, I've needed to get my fat ass running in the outdoors. Well, not all the time. In fact, my state's on fire again, so I can't go back outdoors right now. But maybe in a couple days I will if the wind blows hard enough. But when I do go outside, I go jogging. And when I jog, you know what I don't want to have to happen? I don't want these damn earbuds falling out of my ears. Guess what doesn't happen with the Raycon earbuds? They don't fall out of your ears. They've got the different sizes that go in your ears. They're not falling out. They're super comfortable. Oh, also, they work awesomely. The Everyday E25 earbuds are the best ones yet, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a compact design. Again, fits in your ears. They're stylish and discreet. There's no wires. They don't get tangled. You know who uses them. You know Ray J made them. And you know that people like Snoop Dogg use them. That's all you need to know. 45-day free return policy on these earbuds, and they're great, so I don't think you'll need to. For a limited time, you get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck for 15% discount on Raycon wireless earbuds. Again, if you're just lounging around the house, perfect. If you're working out, perfect. I love these things. Sometimes, in fact, guys, I stick one Raycon earbud in an ear and just walk around and listen to some like podcast, and then have the other ear open so like Ruby can talk to me. So I'm not completely cut off to the world. I don't know if you do that, but I would highly recommend it if you cohabitate with somebody. Raycon, the Everyday E25 earbuds. Again, it's buyraycon.com/puck, 15% off your offer. Now, what were you going to say, Ryan? Because I was going
to say, you know, to our earlier point about, you know, anybody can get hot and blah, blah, blah. Is Dallas – like, I don't know that it matters if Dallas is one of the top three teams in the West, as long as they're one of, like, the eight best teams in the league overall. And I think they're probably right in that – the lower end of that group overall, right? Like, you know, you're kind of expecting Boston. You're kind of expecting Tampa to come back. You're expecting maybe Toronto, Vegas, maybe the Islanders, but I'm not super bullish on that. And then out west, you know, obviously, yeah, they're either top three or top four, depending on, like I said, Vancouver probably is the one big one to worry about. And yeah, if they're like one of the eight best teams in the league, your odds of winning the Stanley Cup really aren't that much worse than the best team in the league. So, you know, like. They have another kick at the can at it for sure, but you know that is also true of seven or eight other teams in the league. So
it is true, and yet at the same time, like we just saw, if not the best team in the league, one of the two or three best teams in the league win the Stanley Cup last year. The Blues were among the best teams in the league for the second half. The Capitals have been one of the best teams in the league for years, even though there's been a dip. but they were coming off like back to back President's Trophy caliber seasons. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh had been I do feel like there's this kind of feeling that hey, anyone can win the cup, and yeah, probably anyone can, and we've certainly seen some anyone's make deep runs, but. Yeah, you know.
Well, you know what?
I think there's too many years where we've been shocked.
Let me amend that then.
Oh, okay.
Anybody can make any of the top like 8 or 10 teams in the league can make the cup final any given year. And once you get there, you know, it's just bounces, right? So, yeah, I mean, your odds of being quote unquote in it are pretty good if you're in that realm. And so, yeah, like. Again, like I don't think anybody I saw was like very seriously like, oh, Dallas is like the, you know, one of the two best teams in the West and they're going to go to the cup final and that kind of thing. But if you had said, hey, by the way, Dallas is going to go to the cup final against Tampa, you'd go, sure. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, and, sure. And if you said, you know, who's going to go to the cup final from the West? And oh, by the way, I'll give you a little hint. Half of Colorado is going to get hurt. In round two.
Oh yeah, and then
you suddenly you kind of nudge. But it is funny because you look at Dallas and you know I feel like the fact that they got the bye and they were one of those four teams that skipped the play-in round kind of elevated them in a lot of our mind. They finished with fewer points than the Oilers.
Yep.
Wow. And
I'm fascinated by this because the Oilers had more points than the Stars, but they played more games and so points percentage Dallas was ahead. But the NHL absolutely could have just said we're going to give. Two spots to each division, and then Edmonton gets a bye, and Dallas is in the play-in round against Chicago. And how different might both of those teams look going forward if you know, maybe Dallas just rolls over Chicago and still has the same run. But, you know, especially from an Edmonton perspective, I'm just sitting there going, like, we had more points than these guys, and now we're hot garbage, and they're, you know, they're playing for the Stanley Cup. It's, Small margins everywhere in the NHL. It's pretty fascinating.
Well, speaking of the Oilers being hot garbage, did you see the thing about Klefbom might be out for long term? And boy, that defense isn't good to begin with. That defense without Oscar Klefbom, like holy shit, dude. I don't know.
Well, that's why they're dabbling in the dark arts of Oliver Ekman-Larsson now. Apparently, you know, they're one of the teams.
Oh, yeah. He just needs like 6 or 7 more seasons, and I think he'll finally be at the point where everybody said he could be when he was 22 years old. Like,
I'm on the overrated train too on that one.
Yeah,
I was gonna say though, before we go to the like off season stuff, I do want to tie a bow around this because. I stopped you, Ryan, during the bonus episode from, in the words of Dennis Miller, getting off on a rant here about asterisks.
That's a timely reference.
Yeah, thank you. But apropos, considering the timely references that Dennis Miller makes. True. Fucking LeBron came out with, oh, there shouldn't be an asterisk on this one. And then Cervelli's wrote a column about no asterisk. We've talked about it before. There's a fucking asterisk, but go on.
Of course
go
there
on,
is.
Son. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like you could tell it was a kind of coordinated thing where the second the fucking final buzzer goes, there's like 9 insider guys who are like, by the way, there's no asterisk on this. You're not allowed to say there's an asterisk. And in fact, the only asterisk you could add is that it was even harder than usual. And it's like, we all understand why you're saying that, but come on.
I don't buy that it was harder, but I do.
No, it's harder. Did you not hear it was harder?
Yeah, oh, listen to Damian Cox over here. Not harder. Holy shit! Wow.
But I said at the beginning, when people were talking about is there going to be an asterisk or whatever, I was like, it kind of depends on who wins. Like, if one of the really good teams wins, then it makes it a lot easier to go, okay, that was something, versus like if the Florida Panthers had just gotten hot and rolled and you'd be like, what the hell was that? And that was really strange. So, I mean, there's an asterisk in the sense that this was clearly unique and different from anything we've seen,
yeah,
but I don't think any Lightning fan has to, you know, remotely feel like this is any less worthy of a Stanley Cup than it would have been under other circumstances, partly because we just watched 2 months where, you know, before this started, we didn't know, like, how was the quality of the games going to be? Was the ice going to be garbage? Were we going to see crazy injuries everywhere? No, we didn't see that. We saw NHL hockey and it, you know, and we also said, like, what happens if some team is contending and then suddenly a bunch of guys get COVID and then they have to leave? None of that happened.
Yeah, that didn't
so
happen.
I don't,
yeah.
If there's an asterisk on this, it's a very small one. And it's
they
one
waited
that
until
I think people are free to disregard.
They waited until the off season for that. But
exactly.
No, your point's taken. But again, like, I just, you know who should feel shitty about their champion? Houston Astros fans, right? Like, if you're a Lightning fan, of course you shouldn't feel shitty about it because everyone played under the same conditions. But the conditions were so untypical, much like they were when the Devils won the Cup in a shortened season. Like, asterisk just means things were different. It means, hey, take a note of this season that was prematurely ended.
For everyone, and they weren't different in a way, I don't believe, that benefited any teams over any other. Now,
let me put it this way, to your point about, you know, the best team won. Like, if the Stars had won, you would go, well, look, I mean... The Avalanche's goalies, the fact that they played Vegas, which was coming off like 7 games in 9 days or something like that because of how much they had to pack the schedule because they wanted to get this done as quickly as possible. Like, there would be a way bigger asterisk if the Stars had won. And you're right. Like, we don't have to fucking think about that.
Islanders would be in that category too.
Sure, but we don't have to think about it now. Now we can just go, well, the team that people were saying in fucking the previous September we're going to win the cup, won the cup. So I don't think we have to be as concerned with it.
It just makes me mental though. Like, no asterisk.
The messaging about it.
No asterisk for a playoff that was played inside two cities with 24 teams and an additional playoff round that probably won't happen again in any other season ever. Like, what the fuck? Like, well, of course this is an asterisk.
Good news,
like,
for the 2021 season.
Well, we should talk about that real quick. So the latest on that, I wrote about it this week in the column. Here's where we are. The NHL and the players aren't negotiating yet. The players haven't even gotten their committee together to start talking with the league and figuring out what the next steps are and what next season should look like. There's already been just a mountain of speculation about one of these plans that's being suggested, which is a hybrid bubble plan. You do it in a few regional spots. The NHL gets their rivalry games because it'll be an all-Canadian division. It'll be like a Patrick division kind of hub. Like, it's the kind of shit the NHL you could see them doing because it's like, oh, what's the easiest way to try to make up for revenue losses? Have the Rangers play the Flyers all the time. Like, you know, it's like pretty easy call. Is it going to be safe? Is it something that the scientists are going to back and the epidemiologists? I don't know, because they're talking about doing a bubble where teams can kind of come and go and see their families and then come back in, and who the fuck even knows. But the idea that the team executives told me, and Emily Kaplan this for a story last month, like the team executives all kind of think, or a lot of them think, there's a good chance that we start in a format like that, potentially in an empty building, gradually bring back fans during the course of the season, with the season maybe starting as early as January, as late as February. And that's kind of where we are right now. But the idea that we're not going to do a hub bubbly thing again, it's kind of unfounded. Like, I feel like there's a better chance of it happening at some point next season than not.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know when this fucking thing's gonna blow over, right? Like, that's the real problem, and you know, they can say, oh, we want to do this safely and blah blah blah, but you know, everybody's saying, oh, it cost them $1.5 million a day to just do the bubble for 24, and then, you know, whatever it boils down to at the end of it. Like, the idea that they're going to do that for 31 teams, given that you know, they're going to be concerned about revenues and all that kind of thing, I don't know. I think on some level it all goes back to the almighty dollar, my friend.
Ooh.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, yes, they want to do these bubbles or hybrid bubbles or whatever for the sake of safety and because they don't want what we're having in the NFL right now and all of this, but they also want it because this league needs fans in the stands.
Yep, absolutely.
And, yeah. And so if you can, you know, rather than have a situation where some teams have fans and some don't, and you know, you if you can put at least, let's say, if we're doing it by divisions, three of the bubbles somewhere in the United States where you can have fans in the building. I don't think you're going to find anywhere in Canada that's going to let you do that, but somewhere in the States where you can have fans, that's part of this too. And,
okay,
and
bubble in this is, Miami, a bubble in Tampa, yeah, a bubble in Dallas.
Jacksonville exactly. Bubble.
It, well, but here's the thing, okay? So if I'm the players and I don't want to go back in the bubble, I did it for 2 months because it was the Stanley Cup and because it was unprecedented times and we made the sacrifice to have it happen. But I'm sitting there going, I don't know if I want to do this again. The big issue here, and you've seen it raised a couple times this week, is are the players going to get paid for a full season if right. next year is 60 games or 40 games? And it's don't sleep on this issue because this really has the potential to blow up because it certainly yep. sounds like the league's position is that is to be determined and that the player's position is or should be. It's
we already
been
took
determined.
A fucking pay cut. Yeah.
They, not only yeah, that, right. but they, yeah, the this memorandum of understanding that they signed last year, or last year, they signed like 2 months ago, but it feels like last year, that for the new CBA, it addressed this specifically. And it said that for this coming season, the NHL, the players are getting not their full pay because they're getting it's like a 10% gets kicked
yeah,
down the
they
road,
kick it
and
down
20%
the road
escrow.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, they get paid all of that, regardless of whether the season is 82 or 62 or 42 or whatever it is. And the NHL has, in the CBA, the ability to almost unilaterally reduce everyone's pay based on, you know, cataclysmic events or something that might happen. They agreed to waive that right. And now the fact that the league seems to become, you know, maybe a few months ago, it felt like 80 games was doable. And now that it's not, and the league's coming back and saying like, oh, you know, this is still on the table. It, you know, maybe the players give. Maybe the players say, you know what, if we're going to play at all, we got to figure out a way to work this out and be good partners, et cetera, et cetera. But I will tell you, man, if I was a player and I've watched the last 25 years of how player-owner relations
Absolutely.
Has worked under Gary Bettman, I'm like, screw you, man. Like, we put it in writing. You agreed to it. This is not open for discussion unless you want to put something else huge on the table for us to get back. And if that's the case, boy, this could get ugly because there's some teams that might not be able to play if they're paying full salaries for half a season with a quarter of the arenas filled.
Yeah.
In fairness, though, Sean, the owners had their fingers crossed.
Well, yeah. That, so. Is there a no take backseat clause in that? Then I think
the giveaway owners are going to come up with is: what if we let you guys go to the Summer Olympics too?
yeah, not season play. Ends. You can go.
Pat Maroon on the bobsled, fucking A. Let's go. Love it. By the way, you used the term earlier, Ryan, for this all this to blow over, which of course reminds me of Shaun of the Dead. And the classic go to the Winchester, have a nice cold pint, and wait for all this to blow over line, which is one of my favorite lines in any zombie apocalypse movie. We should probably talk about the draft for a second. There it is. Moving on. No, listen. the draft is great, and I'm very excited about the draft. You know, it's always a fun time. But again, I'm an American who doesn't spend nearly as much time as Ryan watching NCAA hockey, certainly doesn't spend as much time as many people watching Canadian junior hockey or paying attention to it. This is the time of year that I love because I get to pretend that I'm smart on something that I have no fucking concept
of. Yeah, speaking of the Olympics, that's every 4 years. It's like, that frickin', that double axel was horseshit. Fuck you. Oh, okay.
I mean, I have a like baseline familiarity with maybe like the top 12 players in this draft, and I just have to have that for my job. Beyond that, if like looking at this mock draft I'm looking at now, if the Ottawa Senators at 28 take Helgi Grans from Malmo, I mean, I'm not going to have an opinion on it. I'll leave that to Corey and Chris Peters.
Yeah,
like who gives a shit? But I do know this. I think it's interesting that they've said that Byfield is less NHL ready than Stutzel is. I think it's interesting that I'm fascinated to see what the Devils do at seven. I think if Drysdale's still there, they have to take him because their defense is so thin in the system. But every indication I've gotten from talking to people around that team is that they're seriously considered taking Askarov, the goalie, at seven, which would be, in the eyes of a lot of people, a reach. But then again, like a lot of people have him going at 13. So how much of a reach really is it if, you know, six picks later he's off the board?
Well, I mean, you don't want to gamble with goalies, I guess. You know, like the number of goalies who get taken in the first round and end up being something is probably not dissimilar from the number of goalies who get taken in like the fourth round and end up being something.
It's somebody not, except point, we just saw a first round goalie
right,
win the Stanley right, Cup, right?
And right.
Right. So but, and like Carey Price. But like for every Carey Price, there's like three, I don't know, fucking Leland Irvings, Jack Campbell.
Jack Campbell. And but to your point, Ryan, like somebody made the comparison for me that drafting a goalie in the first round is like drafting a running back in the first round of the NFL. Like it is the position where, you know, it's much more contingent on the system that you play, your development, you know, how they fit in your scheme versus like best player available. Like, yeah, you're always going to have some guys that are just generational talents. And so that, but that's the thing that comes back to this Askarov kid, which is that, you know, all accounts could be that he is a Vasilevsky good type
player. And the thing to say, I think, about drafting a player out of a pro league versus a junior league is that matters a lot. And he's like a good goalie in the KHL, which is the second or third best pro league in the world. So, you know, like I have a little bit more time for that than, oh, you're not going to believe this kid from the Windsor fucking Spitfires. Oh my God, he's unbelievable. I think that definitely matters. And that's, I mean, that's why Tim Stutzel is more pro ready than Quentin Byfield. He's been playing in a men's league for 2 years, you know? And so I think that definitely matters. But, you know, if all things being equal, like if you want to take a flyer on a goalie, like maybe this is the goalie to do it on. But I still, you know, I would still maybe do the Rangers thing where it's like, why would we draft like a you know, a, whatever, like a defenseman in the sixth round when we could just as easily draft a goalie and then that goalie becomes something, you know?
Right. No, that's a fair point. And again, like I think there's a lot of Mackenzie Blackwood fans out there that would just like watch what the kid did during the season and be like, well, you know, maybe that's not where you look to improve first.
If you're the Devils, like you just have so many fucking needs that like
a lot of needs.
You're not like, oh, boy. I mean, never really draft for need unless it's like a home run kind of a pick, like you have the first or second pick overall. But yeah.
Yeah, and do you trade down if you're the Devils? Would be the other thing if you want that.
Yep.
But the other piece of drafting goalies is they take so long to develop.
That's true.
That's a hard sell when you're even a new GM, whatever it is. Unless you get a Carter Hart, you might wait till this kid's 25 before he gets in. Like how many?
I think there is something to say about, you know, goalies. Maybe like they even tried to fucking delay Carter Hart and it didn't work. It ended up being quite bad for the Flyers, and then they brought in Hart anyway, and it all worked out pretty fucking quickly. Because I think much like, oh, it takes longer for defensemen to develop. Is that true, or is that just like conventional wisdom has meant that defensemen and goalies don't get a chance at 20, 21, 22 years old?
I mean, we've seen, you know, Aaron Ekblad came in as the number one overall pick, and he's been good, but he wasn't a guy who made a big impact at 18. Versus if you get the Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Elias Pettersson, like, I mean, and look, it shouldn't be that way. Goalie is, we're told, the most important position. If you have to wait 5 years, but you're going to get a Vezina caliber goaltender, then that's what you should do. But if I'm a GM, I'm sitting there going, I got a top 10 pick or top 15 or whatever it is. Am I just gifting my replacement his goaltender 5 years from now, making his job easier when I could draft a guy right now who's going to sell tickets, score goals, make me look smart?
Well, the thing to your point about Ekblad, it's like maybe he was never. Like, he, you know, there are some years when the best guy in the draft is fucking Ryan Nugent Hopkins or something like that, you know? So, yeah.
And I guess this is the year that we'd look and say, yeah, I mean,
yeah, like you might have fucked up pretty bad, yes.
But, yeah.
Yep.
So there you go. The draft where everybody is always super smart about players they'd never heard of. All right, moving on to some off-season stuff. Let's first talk about something that didn't happen. You know, I wish at some point in my life I had the cool factor of a Bob McKenzie, where you're in your hammock and you're sipping your margaritas. You are known as Bobby Margarita for that fact. And you just casually toss off a bomb, like, hey, I started making phone calls and I heard Jack Eichel trade rumors, and here's like a thread on Jack Eichel trade rumors, why they're not going to happen. But enjoy yourselves in the next 8 hours as everybody comes up with Jack Eichel trade proposals. Pretty fucking great stuff. And started a couple a day news cycle where Kevin Adams, the GM of the Buffalo Sabres, had to come out and say, yeah, we're not trading Eichel. But good solid speculation and a good chance for everybody to kind of ante up with their Jack Eichel trade proposals, which was a fun read, I felt, for the last couple of days.
Yeah, this felt very much to me like one or more rival GMs really being like, we got to get Jack Eichel out of Buffalo. We need to send in SEAL Team 6, get him out of there.
Right, exactly.
And you know, just trying to gin something up and make Kevin Adams go on the record and up the pressure and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's what this felt like to me.
That's what this would have felt like to me if this was coming out of, like, some certain market or if it was a couple of beat writers. And I know a lot of Sabres fans saw this and were like, yeah, I mean, end of the day, the report was he's not being traded. Nothing to see here. Let's all move. This is Bob McKenzie.
Yeah.
Bob McKenzie is not out there. You know, Bob McKenzie at the height of his powers was never a guy who went looking for the one day of attention that some media guys look for, let alone semi-retired Bob McKenzie. And I don't want to read too much between the lines here, and I don't think Jack Eichel's getting traded ultimately. But Bob McKenzie isn't going to go out with this. No, he knows exactly what kind of impact this is going to have.
Yeah, sure.
He doesn't go out with this if there isn't something to it a lot more than one or two GMs whispering in his ear. Like, there's something going on here. And again, something going on can ultimately result in nothing happening. But there's maybe three guys that I would pay any attention to if they reported something like this and not just roll my eyes and go, this is just somebody trying to make a headline. Bob McKenzie is one of those guys.
Top of the list.
So
yeah.
I don't know, man. There's
a good point.
There's something and there's here which probably still results in nothing happening, but this is, I know God knows there's no fan base that just need some good news more than Sabres fans right now, so I don't want to pile on. If you want to plug your ears and just say nothing to see here, go ahead. But I think there's something to see here.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, if you had said, if he had come out and said, Connor McDavid is on the block or whatever, I'd have gone like, come on. But are the Sabres dumb enough to trade Jack Eichel?
Well, dumb enough or get the enough players back to fill out the moribund lineup. But no,
it's the classic thing of if you even think about trading a Jack Eichel, you got to be 99.9% sure you're getting 90% of Jack Eichel back and his immediate replacement and then other stuff. And who's making that offer, you know?
Well, let's before we get there, I want to say this. The difference for me on this one was it was much more focused on would Jack ask out. Like of course. Every new GM gets hit with this bullshit. Like I was talking to Bill Zito a couple weeks ago from the Panthers. And
used
like,
to pitch for the Oakland A's, is that right?
Yes, he was. He was on Dance. He was on The Masked Singer as well. And he mentioned that like every new GM gets hit with this shit. Like, the minute Kevin Adams got that job, the first phone call is about, what do you think about trading Eichel? Like, Bill Zito got calls about Sasha Barkov.
Like, he's obviously not trading Sasha Barkov, but like he gets calls from guys asking, okay, well, have you considered maybe trading Barkov? And like, so that happens. The interesting thing here was that it wasn't simply just teams calling up and being like, what about Jack? Because that's probably happened to Jason Botterill. It's probably happened to Tim Murray, to everybody. It was, has he had enough? And is it time for him? Is he wanting out?
Is it coming from him? That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, again, like, Bob McKenzie knows if he wanted to, if he had just knew that this rumor was out there and he had it on great authority that there was just nothing at all to it and he wanted to just stamp it out, he knows how to do that. And, you know, again, this threat, he's got quotes from Michael's agent saying, Jack wants to win. He's frustrated. That's interesting. And yeah, he goes on to say, no, he doesn't want out. But then even then, Jack is preparing to head to Buffalo at some point here. Does that sound like an adamant, like, he's all in on the Buffalo Sabres? He's preparing to head there? Yeah, I mean, it's his team. You would think so. And, you know, even at the end, when he wraps it up, the tweet that Sabres fans are holding on to saying, nothing to see here, you know, McKenzie, and again, this is Bob McKenzie. This guy, before he was a TV insider, this guy was like the top newspaper guy. He was the editor of the Hockey News. He knows how to choose his words. He says, the face value review appears as follows. Face value and appears are two awfully interesting qualifiers to put on your Eichel doesn't want out of Buffalo thing. Again, man, I'm not trying to stir the pot, and I'm not sitting here saying Eichel's on his way out. But I don't think you have to read very carefully between the lines to see that there's at least something to this, and maybe it's as simple as Eichel is frustrated and he is starting to at least consider what his future looks like, and so he or his agent or somebody decides to fire a little warning shot up in the air just to get the Sabres' attention, which is fine. That's how the game's played. But I found this very interesting, and I was somewhat surprised at how quickly a lot of people seem to want to dismiss it as just another rumor. You don't get McKenzie out of the hammock just for any old rumor these days.
That's true. And well, the other thing to mention, obviously, with all this is, you know, yeah, Eichel wants to win, and it's really a shame that they force him at gunpoint to sign that 8-year deal.
The Connor McDavid issue, right? Like, oh, poor Connor. Well, poor Connor is getting compensated quite handsomely for having.
Well, it's not even that. It's like, if you think, like, what has Eichel seen that would make him, you know, when he signed that deal? What has he seen in the previous 3 years that would make him go, you know what?
Yeah.
I think 11 years into my career, we're going to fucking really be somewhere. It's the thing of NHL players just try to max out the money because the money is relatively short in this league compared to other leagues. And, you know, if Eichel was smarter and didn't want to commit to a team long term, which, you know, that's his prerogative, you know, he should have signed like a 3-year or 4-year deal.
Oh, well, you have to remember that it was years before Austin Matthews revealed you could actually take a shorter-term deal as a superstar player. So they didn't know.
I understand that Eichel's want, like, oh, well, I just want to have, like, $80 million owed to me over the next 8 years. That sounds fucking great, obviously. But, you know, if he can get $30 million and then 3 years from now, well, shit, now he can get $80 million for 5 years because the cap has gone up and he's even further improved in his career. Like, you know, I get why guys want the financial security in a league where, you know, your career could basically be over, you know, on one play, basically. But, man, the trend of guys signing for 8 years, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's... that's going the way of the dinosaur.
That should end, but here's the flip side of that, right? Maybe Jack Eichel's agent puts that deal in front of him and says you're financially set for life, you've got security, you don't have to worry about it. And maybe Jack Eichel goes, yeah, but what if we get like 3 years into this and the Sabres are garbage? And his agent goes, if that happens, there are ways to put pressure on them to move you out. And I know how to do that. And are we seeing stage one of that. I don't know. Maybe this is me just looking for, you know, this stuff used to happen. Players used to hold out and go, I want to go to a new team, and it doesn't happen anymore. But I don't know. And I'll tell you who's watching this is Edmonton fans, because if you think you're sick of all of the Connor McDavid is going to want out at some point crap that you have to put up with now, imagine it actually happens with Jack Eichel. I mean, it just, everyone's going to turn and stare at Connor McDavid at that point and wait for him to see. But I will point out, as much as bad as the Oilers have been, and as much as we all like to laugh at like Connor McDavid looking like he was trying to swallow his own tongue on the draft lottery night and all this stuff, you've never heard any of this stuff coming out of Edmonton and Connor McDavid. So,
Well, I mean, there was, what was it, two summers ago where he was like, where everybody said, oh, you know, if there's two more years of this, we're going to be in a lot of trouble here. And like, I know Edmonton fans were like, oh, that's just the Toronto media trying to get our superstars out of Edmonton. And it's like, I mean, it could have just been like McDavid's agent running it up the flagpole of like trying to light a fire under the Oilers' ass. And, you know, you can go in circles with all this stuff. But
yeah. The other big news this week that did happen was buyouts. Bobby Ryan bought out by the Ottawa Senators. Good job by the Senators getting rid of the Masterton winner from their roster. And he'll find a place to play pretty quick. I mean, he's going to be the new Shattenkirk, Corey Perry type.
$2 million contender. Put him on your second or third line, you're in great shape.
I mean, he really wants
to still play.
He really wants to go play for the Flyers, but it wouldn't shock me to see him latch on somewhere else instead. And then Henrik Lundqvist gets the buyout of the last year of his deal. Obviously, the Rangers with the goalie logjam there with Grigoriev and Shishkin, and goodbye to the King. The King, you know, living in New York for as long as I did, I got to say he might be the biggest homegrown Rangers star maybe since Rod Gilbert, I'm gonna say. Like, he was a bigger star than Richter, he was a bigger star than Leach, everyone else was imported. Like, he was a mega star in New York, which is not something you often see for hockey.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best player in their franchise's history. So
is he though? I read a headline of a column that Ken Campbell wrote saying, who's better, Henrik Lundqvist or Eddie Jokinen?
I'm not 150 years old. I have no fucking idea who Eddie Jokinen is.
I mean, he remarkably good player. Let me put this to the panel here. Was his status increased by how bad and or middling the Rangers were? Like, when you see how good he is compared to how bad they are, if he was on a good team for the last decade, is what I'm trying to say, would we respect him as much as we do him being the best thing about a bad team?
If he was on a good team, he'd have like four fucking cups based on how well he played behind bad teams, right? Like, that's the big thing is, again, yeah, obviously, in theory.
Oh, he could be like Patrick Waugh, you're saying, like if he was on a better team.
Yes.
Versus maybe Henrik Lundqvist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I got time for that. Sure.
Yeah, like Lundqvist has certainly like kind of the lovable loser thing, you know, where like everybody, when people were saying, oh, we Steven Stamkos is one of like five guys in the league that nobody hates. Henrik Lundqvist has to be one of them, right? Like, even if you're a hardcore Islanders fan, can you really be mad at, like, Henrik Lundqvist for anything that he's ever done in the league? Like, he just seems like a pretty chill guy who happens to be one of maybe the five best goalies of all time. So,
right. And then, like, even as a Devils fan, like, when we would do the Marty's Better stuff, I mean, that was with respect to Lundqvist being really good. It was never like, fuck this guy, he's a fraud. You know, it was our guy was just the better of the two great goalies. And what a weird time, man. Like, a good, what, 10 years, more than that, reign of two goaltenders, two of the best goalies in the league being almost in the same market. It was kind of crazy. Where do you think he goes?
Lundqvist and who?
Brodeur. Oh, come on. You bastard. I walked right into that. Where do you think he goes? Do you think he retires, or do you think he goes somewhere else?
I can, you know where I think it would be great to see him? Is Dallas. He's your 1B. He's on a team that is very close to a cup and isn't, like, 100% reliant on the goalie to get them there. That'd be interesting, but I think any team that is looking at a goalie should certainly look at him, as long as you're not like, he's our definite number one guy, because I don't know that he has that in him at whatever he is, 37, 36. But he's in that area, you know, like he's at least earned the look, I would say. And if it doesn't work out well, he's still your 1B/backup.
Yeah.
Does he want that?
That's the question. Right?
Who knows?
It's not just does he want to play, and he may not. He may say, I'm done. It ends as a Ranger, the only team I ever played for, and off he goes. But then if he does want to play, what's his expectation? Is he saying, I want to go somewhere where I can be the, you know, not the 60 games a year starter if there was a full season, but at least like the 40 game guy, 1A situation? Or does he maybe say, you know what, I want to go win a ring somewhere? Yeah. And, you know, he could call his agent and go, tell the Tampa Bay Lightning I'll play for $1 million to be their backup next year, you know, and go chase your cup that way. Some guys would do that. Some guys never would, because their pride won't let them be perceived as riding a winner that was already built. So I don't know. There's so many different scenarios. There's going to be so much churn in the goaltending. If he wants to play, there's going to be places where he can play.
Plenty of opportunities.
And certainly, you would imagine that given the size of that contract and given the size of the buyout he just had, that he's, you know, he doesn't have to squeeze every dollar out of this deal. This can be a situation where you find the best fit. It's just a question of what does that fit look like, and how much of a backseat is he willing to take, if any at all.
Right. And I think if he wants to play, he wants to play. Like, he's not going to be a passenger. Like, he's going to keep pushing to get playing time and stuff like that. So it's going to be real interesting to see what he ends up doing. The only thing I've heard about him is that he didn't want to leave New York. I mean, it's where his life is. So, I mean, if you wanted to look at that and say, what about the Devils? I mean, you could say that, I guess, but I mean, that would probably mean getting Corey Schneider out of there in some way, shape, or form.
Be horrible for the Devils. Oh boy!
Yeah, right. I know. I think I have heard that the immediate connection between him and the Flyers, because of the Elaine Vigneault thing, may be overplayed a little bit. Like, maybe that's not necessarily
again,
the
that's,
guy.
You're not going to be a starter. You're not going to go bump Carter Hart.
Not even Carter Hart. Yes.
Right. It's, yeah. So I'll be fascinated to see where he ends up.
Toronto Maple Leaf Henrik Lundqvist.
Now you're talking. No problem there. Everybody in the same boat. Everybody rowing the same way, all trying to get to that promised land. What do you think the Leafs do with their goaltending, by the way? I don't want to turn this into fucking Leafs lunch for a second.
No, let's do it.
What do you think? What do they do?
I got to say, like, all the reports are that the plan is to trade Frederik Andersen and then bring in a new 1A who's cheaper, or at least under control, because Anderson's a free agent after next year. He's a UFA, so he's got 1 year left on the deal. Doesn't sound like there's been a lot of talk of extending him, which there probably shouldn't be. I mean, it's a goaltender who's in his 30s by now. He's good, but he hasn't been so good that you can't let him go. So it probably makes sense to write out that deal. That makes a lot of sense, man. If you can trade him and bring in either, you know, sign somebody or go get like a Darcy Kemper or, you know, whoever. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can't figure out where they're going to trade this guy to. Like, we're going into the off season of goaltenders.
Right.
Who is out there saying, you know what I want to do is I want to give up assets to get a $5 million goaltender coming off an average season who's got 1 year left on his deal and is going to want an extension. Like, if Kyle Dubas can pull this off and make any sort of deal where there's value coming back and it's not just a pure salary dump, I'll be really impressed, because I can't imagine who's out there. I mean, Montreal gave up a pick for Jake Allen, so I can't say it's impossible, but I just don't see who is out there going like, yeah, forget about Holpe, forget Kemper, forget Greiss, forget all these guys. Mm-hmm. We got to jump now on Frederik Andersen. I can't see where that's gonna come from.
Yeah, it's gonna be fascinating.
Speaking of free agents, we should touch on this real quick. All right, best guesses. And I mean, this next episode might have more on this, but just, you know, to get ahead of it a little bit, because I'm sure we're going to have news on all these guys in the next week. The common perception, by the way, amongst GMs and player agents, tippy-top guys go real quick. Everybody else, TBD. Like, no one really knows what the fuck's going to happen. The most interesting little pressure point, by the way, is and it's kind of interesting. So, Sean, Canadian Thanksgiving is coming up a week from Monday, correct?
That sounds right, yeah.
Okay, so
I'll be honest, none of us know when it is until like the Thursday before, and then we're like, oh,
right. Okay. So that's important, because I talked to a GM the other day who said that usually the way it works is that free agency opens, and then all your work gets done, and then everybody fucks off for July 4th. And so now you have a situation where it's like free agency opens, are they going to get all their work done and then fuck off for Canadian Thanksgiving? Is it the same vibe, or is it not? Is it the same pressure point?
Well, I mean, we're used to, right, the free agency usually starts on Canada Day, which is like the Canadian 4th of July,
which is
July 1.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, it's kind of like, God, all us Canadian sports writers are like, finally, we'll be able to do free agency without burning a holiday. And it's like, oh, nope, maybe not.
But, yeah. I don't think Columbus Day necessarily has the same point of demarcation as like July 4th here in the U.S. necessarily. So it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But all right, so you might know all this shit by the time you hear this podcast. I don't know. But like, best guess, Alex Pietrangelo. I'll go first. I think he resigns with the Blues. I think they figure it out. He doesn't want to move his stuff. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's what I think too. It's, yeah.
Taylor Hall. The only thing I've heard, and it could be echo chamber time, is that there's a perception he's going to go to Alberta. And it could mean some kind of reunion with the Oilers, or it could mean he's going to play for the Flames, and then they adjust accordingly. But that I can't tell if that's something that people are trying to will into existence.
Saying that for months. Oh, Taylor Hall to the Flames. They'll trade Johnny Gaudreau and get him.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
First, let's start here. Short-term deal or long-term deal for Taylor Hall? What is that?
I think he's got to go short. I think he's got to go short. He's coming off one of his worst years in a while, and the market's fucked. Like, if he goes 2 years, like, who would be surprised by that? Obviously, the risk is that you're closer to 30 and whatever. So,
and my only thing is if. I think somebody out there will offer him a long-term deal. It may not be his first choice. It may not be where he wants to go, but I could absolutely see a team like Edmonton offering to go, if not the full seven, to go five or six. To my mind, and I acknowledge this is mostly wishful thinking, but to me, if you're going to go short deal because the market's not there or whatever, then Don't sign with the Oilers or the Flames.
No, like, of course not.
You know, and again, I know we've talked about it a million times, but go to the Avalanche, man. Like, go play 1 year with the Avalanche, have a career year, probably win a Stanley Cup, and then if, knock on wood, by this time next year or by next offseason, the market's getting a little bit better, then go sign your long-term deal, probably more than you would get right now.
Yep.
That would be what I'm hoping for. But I personally think he winds up in Edmonton, but... on a longer term deal, that just seems like something Edmonton might want to do, especially with Nugent Hopkins. We're not sure where that's going to go. We keep hearing that all of a sudden all the insiders are saying, like, kind of dropping these hints that the trade market might actually be a lot crazier than you think. Nugent Hopkins got 1 year left on a deal. Maybe he's a guy who's in play. There's lots of teams out there always looking for centers. Maybe this is Edmonton's way to rectify the big mistake from 4 years ago. I don't know.
You get both Taylor Hall and Adam Larson on your team, oh baby, look out.
Yep, be crazy.
I'll go Boston trades Jake DeBrusk and Taylor Hall is your short-term contract with the Bruins. Huh?
That'd be
smart for Boston. I think Taylor Hall is
fucking go. You think he's an upgrade?
I guess what I mean to say is I think Jake DeBrusk is overrated.
Mm.
Speaking of Boston, Torrey Krug. What do you think, Ryan?
Detroit, right? Like that seems to be what everybody's saying. He's from Michigan. He went to Michigan State. Like,
he's tired of winning.
Yeah. Detroit's just going to be like, "Oh, you want like $11 million fucking dollars? Sure. No problem." They don't have any. Their defense sucks so bad. Like, they need somebody who's not like, fuck, Alex Biega's on this team for next year. Jesus Christ. I just pulled up their cap friendly page. It's a nightmare. They need defense. They need a guy who can sell a ticket. I think Torrey Krug checks that ball. And, you know, it's not like Detroit is completely without talent. And if we've seen one thing, it's that Torrey Krug makes your power play really good. So Dylan Larkin, Anthony Mantha, Tyler Bertuzzi, come on down. You guys are all going to get twice as many power play points this year.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense. I think you sold me on that, but it'd be with the caveat that I'm going to say if I'm Torrey Krug, yeah, Detroit.
Oh, I don't want to go. Like, you know, I'm not like, oh, hell yeah, let's go Red Wings.
I'm telling my agent, yeah, Detroit's fine. Let's use the Oilers to bump up the asking price because they need a defenseman. And let's just see what happens if we could create a bidding war between Ken Holland and Steve Yzerman. See how that might go. But do not under any circumstances actually sign me to a contract to play for the Edmonton Oilers.
How old's Torrey Krug? Like 20?
27-ish?
I wonder if Jersey would be up for him. It's kind of defensive.
He's 29.
He's 29.
No, you don't want that. He's too old. Picking a goalie out of a hat here. I was going to say Jacob Markstrom, but really, any goalie. Give me a goalie prediction.
Markstrom back to Vancouver. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out too.
I think back to Vancouver, but I don't necessarily feel like it's the same as the Petrangelo situation where it's like they'll figure it out before he hits the market. I could see Markstrom going to the market and being one of those guys where the Canucks just say, like, look, nobody knows what's going to happen with goalies. If you can hit a home run out there somewhere and go get a six-year deal, you've earned it. Go get it. We're not giving you that. We got Thatcher Demko ready to go. We want to do something shorter. Go out there, see what the market has. If you find it, great, no hard feelings. If you don't, come back and we'll talk. And I could see it playing out that way where he comes back and decides to stay there for good money, but doesn't hit the home run that he would like to in a market where there's, in theory, going to be so much goaltending out there.
I think Crawford stays. I think Markstrom stays.
Leonard stay in Vegas?
Leonard's definitely staying in Vegas.
Where does Fleury go?
I think Fleury stays. I don't know, man. Like, I feel like Fleury stays. I feel like that he likes that team enough where he might want to just stick it out to try to win next season.
You can't spend $13 million on goaltending, though. Can't do it.
But what are you going to do with him, though?
I mean, you know, you
buy him out or...
Yeah, you just make it clear to him, like, we don't have a spot for you, bud. Like, thanks for your help the first couple of years, but...
But here's the thing that I agree with you that, like, there's a lot of water under the bridge there. But the reason they acquired Lehner was because they felt their goaltending position needed two guys. So you know what you have in Fleury. He's really good.
Yeah, but he costs $7 million.
But, like, what is the conundrum on that team where you need to open up that money?
They need to sign, like, four guys, don't they? Yeah, they only have 18 guys under contract for next year, and they're $5 million short. So they'll be up to 19 and maybe even a little bit over with Lehner. And they need – not like, look, they don't need to – make a big deal out of re-signing Stevenson and Chandler, who they're the only two RFAs, yeah. But you need a couple of defensemen, and you need
to tweak because you didn't
three
win.
Forwards, and
you want to make some changes. You didn't win last year. I get you, but I wonder if they would be creating a problem they don't need to create by switching up the goaltending, which,
well,
by all accounts, was the best thing about that team this year.
It It is. So two things on this. First of all, at least according to Cap Friendly, Fleury's deal doesn't have bonuses or anything that make it hard to buy out. So it's the basic. There's 2 years left.
Does he have limited trade protection or a full?
He does have. No, he's got trade protection. But
again, 10 team, right, no trade list.
Yeah. Okay. So it's. Yeah. So you can buy it out. You're paying $2 million and change over 4 years instead of a $7 million cap hit over two. So it could make sense. The other thing is, like, I know we're saying, oh, they might be making a problem if they let. Like, are we forgetting the whole sword in the back thing?
Right. No, like, that's what I mean. Yeah. You know, like you.
And I understand that, you know, Fleury might say, I'm happy, I want to stay here. Okay, great. What's going to happen a month into the season when he's not playing? Like, does this flare up again? I don't know. It's I could see a buyout there. And at which point, there's a ton of interest in the guy, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And here's how you can maybe make it work with both of them if, like, you can keep the egos in check and all that kind of shit. If you can find a buyer for Paul Stastny, well, I mean, you know, that frees up $6.5 million for a guy who's like a third liner at this point in his career, you know? And so I'm not super optimistic, but like everybody said, like there's gonna be more movement than people think and blah blah blah. Like,
the few teams with cap room could in theory just get a ransom for taking some of these guys.
Well, you say I'm that not though. Talking But, like, Detroit only got a second rounder for taking Mark Stahl from a team that absolutely needed to clear space. And so, like, I mean, you know, based on the Patrick Marleau and the first round pick, like, I said it yet in the newsletter, but, like, the fact that they're going to get a pick for taking Mark Stahl and apparently have every intention of using him. You know, I don't know that there's any indication they're going to buy him out or anything like that, although maybe they should. You know, and they're going to pick like 40 spots lower than the pick Carolina got. Mm. That's fucking crazy.
And the other question is, like, of the teams that have cap space, who can actually do it? Like, Ottawa's got a ton of space, but they just bought out Bobby Ryan, which only makes sense if you're worried about cash out the door. Like, they seem like they might go super cheap. Panthers might go super cheap.
A million teams are going to be budget teams this year.
The Avalanche have a ton of cap room, but they're not looking to add dead weight for a year to get a draft pick. They're looking to win a Stanley Cup. So, it's a tough
It's going to be really, the internal budget thing is really the one that no one really knows what's going to be. I mean, like, there's no one knows what it's going to mean. So we'll see. All right. Oh, breaking news, by the way. Steven Stamkos had sports hernia surgery, according to Julien Brisebois, before the pause. Okay. He fully recovered, but he had in his rehab, it triggered a compensation injury. And we fully expect him to be ready for next season. So he has the surgery for sports hernia, and then he recovered from it. And then during the rehab, there was another injury that was related to the surgery.
Yes. Well, there you go.
And that's what his deal was. So there you have it, folks. Steven Stamkos.
Mystery solved.
Do you know? Can we talk about that for a second? When I was at Yahoo, that was one of the editorial rules. Was that the more articles where you could get the words mystery solved at the front of the headline, the more of those you should do. And the place where you found the most was the Olympics. That was a big thing in the Olympics where it was like, mystery solved. Why swimmers close their noses when diving into the pool and shit like that. That was like the clickbaity thing that they had. That was a rule of as many mystery solved stories as you could do. They would always like make the front page of Yahoo.
And, boy, they must have hated Robert Stack over at Yahoo. Fucking unbelievable joke.
It was a great joke. I appreciate it.
Wow.
I appreciate it. In his trench coat. All right, let's... by the way, new Borat movie, boys. What do we think?
Hell yeah, let's fucking go. Like, the problem with the Borat movie is
now,
that...
The Borat movie is that, what I just did.
Correct, yeah. It just became too much of, like, a meme. Like, I rewatched it, I don't know, a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this movie is so fucking funny. Like, it's really unbelievable how funny that movie is. And yeah, just like, you know, Napoleon Dynamite's the same way, where like people liked it too much and mm-hmm. made it too much of a thing. And now it's like, oh, okay. You know, I don't
Borat truly is on a level of like Airplane as far as like the depth and number of like the hit to miss ratio on jokes. It's incredible. Full title of the new movie, boys. Borat subsequent movie film : delivery of prodigious bribe to American regime for make benefit once glorious nation of Kazakhstan. So that's the full title of the movie.
Yep. Apparently, you have to say the whole thing when you buy the ticket, or else yes. they won't.
Apparently the plot is that he is going to try to marry off his daughter to someone close to Donald Trump and chooses Mike Pence as his target. Exactly. Now we're off and running, right?
Oh my god. He's a genius.
Apparently also the movie is going to have a thing where he became such a celebrity in the US based on the previous documentary, the Borat documentary, that he is now having to deal with people noticing him and being an American celebrity as well. So it's a whole thing, and I'm looking forward to it. Amazon Prime. Yeah. Oh, and to your point, Ryan, in this AV Club story, there's a really good quote from a Simpsons writer named George Meyer, who I hope wrote good Simpsons stuff.
Yeah, he did. Day. Yep.
Good. He said the first time he watched it, it felt like someone had just played me Sergeant Peppers for the first time. And I think that's a good, like, proxy. Like, it's something that is completely, like, ingrained in popular culture, and it doesn't feel special anymore. But at the time you watched Borat, and you're just like, holy fucking shit, this just shifted the paradigm. And it's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I had been a fan of Da Ali G Show, which is yeah. where Borat, of course, premiered. And mm-hmm. famously, he met with Donald Trump in one of them. And Donald Trump is like, I was the only guy to never get tricked. And he didn't. Like, he walked in the room. Borat – or it was Ali G, actually. But Ali G made, like, a little started to do the thing, and Trump was like, this sucks, and left immediately. Right. But, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, Borat is just – the reason it's the breakout character is yeah. that it's so good at – in a way that even Bruno isn't – at getting people, like, to be very comfortable with this buffoon that doesn't understand their ways, and they're like right. – oh, yes, we treat black people like slaves. And he's like, oh, very nice. You know, right. like that's
right.
That's it.
I showed Ruby the she had never seen the Throw the Jew Down the Well song before.
Yeah.
From Ali G. And fuck, man, that it is. For those who don't know, he goes to a country bar and it's an open mic, and he gets on stage, and eventually it's throwing different problems in Kazakhstan down the well. And then he gets to Jews, and everybody claps along and sings with it.
They love it, yeah.
It's fucking yeah. incredible. My favorite Ali G Show moment, of course, I think we've talked about it on the show before, is the find the interview with Buzz Aldrin. It is one of the greatest things of all time.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I will say, though, I think the funniest thing is he's in character as Ali G, and he's on a farm, and he's like, what does this cow do? And all that right. kind of stuff.
Right.
But there's a chicken with like a strange look. And yeah. he almost breaks.
He almost
like
breaks.
He starts laughing yeah. really hard because the chicken just looks insane. And the guy's like, what's going on in character? He goes, what is him wearing? And it's... That honestly is the best thing to ever happen on the Ali G Show.
Asking Buzz Aldrin if the moon is real.
Yeah,
and sure. Buzz Aldrin's reaction is...
Famous curmudgeon, Buzz Aldrin.
My favorite moments of all time. All right, so to close out the show, boys, we got ourselves an overrated, underrated, favorite, least favorite. There's a couple of different options. Sean, I want to get your input on this one. Pizzas, potato preparations, which I don't know if we've done, but it sounds like we maybe have.
I feel like we have, yeah.
Wing flavors... mythical creatures, and types of berries.
Any of those strike your fancy, Sean?
Let's go. Let's do the wings.
All right. In honor of Tori Krug.
Yeah, exactly.
Overrated wing. Overrated wing is regular barbecue. I do differentiate spicy barbecue and regular barbecue. Spicy barbecue gives me what I'm looking for in a wing and makes me feel okay about eating something that is so fucking sloppy that it makes your face all gooey. I would say regular barbecue for me is overrated.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. Unfortunately, the answer is buffalo.
No,
buffalo
no.
is an overrated hot sauce. It's too vinegary.
Hmm. Sean?
That's a terrible take, and we'll get to it in a minute. But I'm going to say overrated. I'm going to say overrated is any hot sauce that's just, like, too hot. Like, settle down. Like,
oh,
you don't,
yeah.
Wings, I anyone who listened to Biscuits knows I have very strong feelings about chicken wings and what they should be and what they shouldn't be. And wings are supposed to be hot, but you don't have to get nuts about it.
Like, oh, that's right.
If it's going to make you physically sick, you're not impressing anyone with your manliness, because it's always a guy who goes out and orders, like, the extreme, you know, 911 sauce. Settle down. Get something that's as hot as you can comfortably enjoy, and that's it.
I think we've talked about it before, but, like, the whole culture around, like, oh, this is, like, the ass-ripper hot sauce or whatever, and it's fuck off. We don't, like, we get it. You're like, the dangerous guy who's like, I can handle it. I'm something of a heat seeker. I love spicy food, but, like, you know, one time... So I along those lines, one time I went into a wing place or a pizza place that had wings, and you know, as a person who really enjoys spicy foods, like often the things that they're like, oh, this is like a 5 out of 5 spicy. I'm like, yeah, that's a little bit spicy, sure. And one time I ordered that kind of a wing, and it was so hot that like I ate 1.5 of them, and I was like, I had tunnel vision. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I could just kind of see anything in my periphery. And it's like, to your point, Sean, that sucks. Like, that's not fun.
One of the most embarrassing moments of my life was, like, being in a bar, same situation, and it was like, get, like, the super spicy, and the waitress is like, you know, they're really hot. And you're like, yeah, you always say that. I'm sure I can handle it. Anyways, long story short, it's the only time I've ever ordered a glass of milk in a bar.
Yeah.
Which is never a situation you want to be in, man. Because that's not even something you can hide. Everybody sees the waitress bringing that glass of milk through the bar. And I'm literally the milk drinker in the bar because I ordered chicken wings that were...
You're like, oh, it's a white Russian. I'm actually very cool still.
Yeah.
I forgot that you and I, Sean, I believe we both did a podcast with a maniac who likes boneless wings.
Which is
one of Lowe's worst takes. The fucking
it's not,
wings.
And there is no such thing as boneless wings. That's like having
I don't hate a boneless
fries.
Wing,
There's,
but I, it's certainly
they're chicken,
not the
they're
preference.
Chicken nuggets, which is a totally fine but completely different type of
thank
food.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I the boneless wing thing just bothered me because again, like I'm you know, part of the joy of eating a wing is just being a fucking carnivore and just ripping the flesh off the bone with your teeth and just like, you know, I'm all about that. So, underrated. I'm a huge fan of garlic parmesan, wings. I find it to be a nice change up. I know it's sort of like, you know, You're at a red sauce place and you're like, I'll get the Alfredo. I understand there's a certain amount of change up to it, but I'm a big fan of garlic parmesan wings, and I don't know if that's necessarily everybody's favorite go-to wing. But
I don't know that it's a go-to, but every time I have it, I'm like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really good. So that's my underrated.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mentioned earlier that the reason I don't like buffalo is that it's too vinegary, and there is a place around here that it's called Wings Over, and so it'll be like Wings Over Boston, Wings Over Somerville, that kind of thing. And they have an orange garlic or a citrus garlic, and that is just right in terms of heat and flavor and all that kind of stuff. I love that. That one particular kind of the mix of the citrus and the garlic is really, really nice. So
yeah.
I would, if I had to pick an underrated, I would say that there are some places that can do like a dry chicken wing that's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, yeah. And by which I don't mean plain, obviously, but
like a Cajun spice one.
Yeah, like, that can work, especially if you're in a situation where, I don't know, like me, you're on your way to a job interview. You don't want to get sticky sauce all over the place. Like, yeah, that can be fun.
Favorite for me, put a spoiler warning on this one for Sean's, buffalo. I fucking love a buffalo wing.
Yes,
I love a buffalo wing. I love the taste of it. I love the vinegariness. I love using it as a delivery system for blue cheese. And it's also like a sense memory thing where I think about all the great times I've had eating buffalo wings at a bar, watching football, you know, out with friends at a fucking TGI Fridays or some bullshit. Like it's a food that like pizza. Like it's a food where you're eating it, and there's probably a reason why you're eating it, because you're having a good fucking time. So a buffalo wing, without question, is my favorite.
Yes,
delivery.
It's the only correct answer.
Yeah. Okay. But not the only one, because there is someone who's about to hit us with another one.
Well, he's going to hit us with an answer. But it's not the correct.
The correct answer is the Bonchon spicy wing. If you've ever been to Bonchon.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
It's fucking incredible. Both the flavors of Bonchon wing are fantastic. Like, I think they're the basically platonic ideal of the chicken wing, but yeah, I like the spicy one just a smidge better, just a smidge. But man, Bonchon fucking rules.
Borat: the platonic ideal of the chicken wing for make better glorious nation of Kazakhstan.
I don't think that's the name of it, Greg.
Oh, sorry. Least favorite. So. The real answer is just oven-roasted, undressed wings.
Oh. Yeah, but that's like, not.
But that's not. That's, I know. That's not a real answer.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a real answer. Lemon pepper. Never a fan of, like, lemon pepper is the donut that you leave in the box. It's still a chicken wing, so it's pretty good compared to, like, not having a chicken wing. But much like I'm not a huge fan of, like, lemon chicken from a Chinese food joint, I'm not a fan of a lemon pepper wing. It could just be one of those of, like, by comparison to my other options, not good versus being like disgusting, but it's my least favorite chicken wing of the ones that are usually commonly found on the menu.
Yeah, I think here's where I'm going to go with regular barbecue sauce. Because you have so many other fucking options. You're just going to put some like Ray's on there? Come on.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with it as a side condiment, but if you're doing that as your main option, I have to question your judgment.
My answer is literally anything that isn't buffalo sauce or at least buffalo sauce adjacent. Like, I get it that if you're eating wings every day and you're living your very best life, maybe you want to mix it up every now and then, but if you're getting barbecue sauce or sweet and sour or really anything.
Oh, sweet and sour is a great fucking call.
Just
yes, absolutely.
Just order chicken. Just get chicken, which is a excellent food, which is a completely different category than the chicken wing. A chicken wing has got to have bone, it's fried skin, it's a little tiny bit of chicken, and it's orange sauce. That's what that type of food is. Anyone who tries to pass off anything else as a capital C, capital W chicken wing, it's like the people who are like, hey, have you tried our version of poutine? It's like, well, does it have gravy and cheese curds? Because if not, it's not poutine. It's french fries and gravy with something else on it, and french fries and gravy is great, and chicken is great. But every time I walk into a place and they're like, we have the biggest chicken wings in town, well, wrong. I'll stop you right there. What you have is a way to order chicken for people who don't just want to order chicken. Buffalo sauce or something pretty close to it. It's got to be orange. Anything else is just a waste of a good chicken wing.
Yeah.
You say that. Have you had Bonchon before?
I haven't. And what you're describing to me sounds like, I mean, maybe that falls into the circle of being close enough that I'd be like, yeah, this is kind of a twist.
Yeah, it's
on
more
it,
it's more like soy based. I think it's soy garlic is their main flavor, and then you can get like a spiced up version of
that. That sounds like something that would be absolutely delicious on chicken. But I'm getting chicken wings. I better have an orange mustache by the end of this meal.
The spicy one is definitely, you will have like red fingers. I also don't like one that's like overly wet. A wing that's just like, you need 9 napkins and stuff like that. I don't, that's too much for me.
Indeed. All right. Great show. I think we gave you a lot of content. Thanks to us. Thanks to Raycon for sponsoring it. And we'll talk to you next week when it'll be post-draft, right around free agency. My God. The action never stops when there's a pandemic affecting your season. You can read my stuff on ESPN.com. I wrote about the Bubble 2.0 next season and the lessons that we've hopefully learned from this season, as well as a little bit about the Lightning winning, as well as some winners and losers stuff. And my other podcast with Emily Kaplan was a deep dive on the Stanley Cup Final this week. It's called ESPN on Ice, and you can check it out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
While you're doing that, sign up for the Puck Soup Patreon, where we did this week, we did the finale of our ultra-specific draft. It was a shade over an hour long, and everybody is mad at us for different reasons. And also, I have a newsletter on there twice a week, so sign up for all of that stuff.
Yeah, I'll second that. The draft was this may have been my favorite bonus episode.
It's really something, man.
I really hope people listen to that. And
yeah, I don't want to spoil it. There's already controversy, but we'll talk about
because
that
one
next
of us
week.
Cheated is
yeah,
the
and I want and
so.
let's leave it open as to which one of us is the one who right. cheated.
Exactly, we're not going to say who cheated.
We're not going to say which one of us misunderstood the rules. And
now you're narrowing it down. But we'll talk about it next week. I want to give people a chance to listen to the bonus. A lot of people checked it out on day one, a highly anticipated podcast. But yeah, it's on the Patreon now. It's the ultra. What do we call it again? The
ultra specific draft.
It's really fucking fun. I at the end of it, I just kind of like was wow. I can't believe. We actually were able to pull it off, and it also made it a pretty good episode too. So do check that out. The biggest landslide winner of the Supotle we've ever had, we should say as well.
Yeah, it was not close.
So good stuff, and thanks again for supporting the show. We will continue on the regular basis for the next few weeks. We actually don't think even talked about what the fuck we're doing yet for the off season. So we'll figure that out and let you know. Foreseeable future, we're pushing on. There's just going to be a ton of fucking news through the month of October at the very least. So thanks for supporting the show. It's been great to see everybody hanging in and listening and getting on the Patreon, a lot of good stuff too. Keep your eyes out for that Taco Bell article, by the way. And we'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.